Support for WPR comes from UW-Superior Center for Continuing Education, offering Conversations on Living Alone, a three-part series beginning Wednesday, April 17th via Zoom. Details at uwsuper.edu. Support for WPR comes from Focus on Energy, committed to helping Wisconsinites focus on the planet by making smart energy choices. Energy resources for Earth Day and every day can be found at focusonenergy.com.
You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Cynthia Schuster, jumping in here because we are having some difficulty reaching or hearing from John Munson up in Superior, who should be hosting today. I'm going to jump in until we can verify that our connections are established properly. But until then, we are welcoming in Susan McManus. She's a distinguished professor in the Department of Government and International Affairs at the University of South Florida. We're talking today about President Obama's State of the Union address, which was last night. Getting your reaction as well at 1-800-642-1234. I can hear John now. I'm going to toss it back to him since he is our host today here on the Ideas Network. Go ahead, John.
Well, I don't know. Cynthia, you're doing so great. I'll just step out for coffee and you can carry on. Well, maybe not. Okay. Sorry about that, folks. The gremlins were in the machinery again this morning. Maybe it's just too cold. So last night, President Obama laid out his vision for America in the State of the Union address, his fifth of his presidency. We're going to talk about that, what President Obama had to say about income inequality and other economic issues, and we'll also talk about the Republican response. My guest is Susan McManus, distinguished professor in the Department of Government and International Affairs at the University of South Florida. Good morning, Professor, and welcome to the Joy Cardine program.
Good morning to all of you in that cold tundra.
Yeah, it's chilly, but, you know, it's also January, so we have to expect a certain amount of that. So first of all, let's start with your overall reaction to what the president had to say last night. Anything surprising or pretty much what you expected?
Several things were surprising and I think very much appreciated. One was there was far less direct bashing of Republicans than you had seen in some of his earlier State of the Union addresses. And another surprising thing was, even though a lot of people are still talking this morning about him, you know, promising to use a lot of executive orders, there really wasn't much specific examples. There weren't many specific examples of him planning to do that. And in fact, nearly every issue that he talked about that needed some kind of resolution involved Congress. And he says, Congress, you can do this. You can expand on this. So a little bit different than we had expected, but the tone was, I think, very optimistic at a time when Americans are pretty pessimistic, and that was the appropriate approach for him at this stage of his presidency, an optimistic approach and kind of hitting things that are doable, but recognizing he really can't, when all is said and done, do a lot of this by himself. He does need Congress.
Well, he can do some things by himself, but the things that he can do are pretty narrowly focused. Let's talk about one that he proposed doing. He wants Congress to raise the federal minimum wage to at least $10 an hour and index it for inflation. He can't unilaterally do that, but the one thing that he could do, he did, at least partially, proposing that by executive order, beginning next year, not immediately, beginning next year, federal contract workers would be paid $10.10 an hour. This will really only affect several hundred thousand people, raising the minimum wage for everyone would affect about 17 million. So is this sort of symbolic? If you guys aren't going to do anything, I'm at least going to do something?
Two things. First of all, it was a very catchy number, 10-10, okay? Secondly, there are a lot of Democrats who are going out on the campaign trail who believe strongly that the minimum wage needs to be increased. So him giving this kind of coverage of it, high-profile coverage and a number, does allow them to go on the campaign trail with something they firmly believe in. On the other hand, if you're a person who is a minimum wage individual or someone who is unemployed or grossly underemployed, you're not going to be very patient, and this is not going to resonate terribly well with you. The idea, the word future, was kind of a downer, I think, for a lot of those people.
Mm-hmm. As you pointed out, we're coming up on midterm elections. Things were looking really good for Democrats about the time of the government shutdown. Then things reversed, and now it's looking like we'll get, at this point anyway, things are looking much better for the Republicans. So what, other than the minimum wage thing, what did the president give Democrats running for reelection or election in the midterms? What sort of things did he toss them other than the minimum wage issue?
He was very, very aggressive and on the offensive on the Affordable Care Act, and I think gave one of the strongest responses that he's given on the whole issue, and put the ball back in the court of the Republicans, really saying very strongly, you know, we may not be able to work something out, but you better put something on the table. And that's the kind of message that will be helpful to Democrats on the campaign trail. Of course, the typical ones, a strong environmental statement about alternative energy, that's a Democratic issue, that position. Education, expanding pre-K education, making college more affordable. Better job training for people, education, environment, energy, all the three E's were all things that he spoke about that will be helpful to Democrats on the trail.
So the president issued a pretty strong pushback against climate change deniers. He basically said, look, the debate's over. This is fact. We need to do something.
And that's still up for debate, of course. That's an issue that's partisan differences, but I don't really feel that there's going to be too much attention to that when way over 60% or 70% of Americans still talk about the number one need in this country being employment and jobs. And so the energy, yes, it will grab the attention of pretty much the environmental community, who has traditionally favored Democrats, but for a lot of people, that's just not going to resonate that much.
And of course, the president always has invited guests that he brings to the speech. What did you take away from those the president had invited last night? What point do you think he was trying to make about those that he had with him?
It was clear the emphasis was on the middle class and average Americans who are struggling economically. And each of the individuals he picked out were examples of either things that needed to be done or things that had been done that were successful. For example, he picked a woman who had just secured affordable care or health care coverage 3 days before she had to have major surgery, and made the point that if you sign up, things can be done. Look at this woman's success stories. But clearly, the one that roused the most emotion and really got tremendously strong bipartisan support was the wounded warrior that he brought and told the story of his heroism and the struggles that still exist for all of these people who have given a lot of their lives and lost limbs and have mental issues, that the country still owes them the support, and challenging Congress to make sure that happens.
We're talking about President Obama's State of the Union address last night. Wondering what you think. What did you think of the speech? Anything you particularly liked or disliked? What do you think should be or is priority number one for the nation in 2014. And then also would like to get your thoughts on the Republican response. 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. Talk at WPR.org is the email address. You can also find the Joy Cardine program on Facebook. We're talking about the State of the Union speech with Susan McManus, distinguished professor in the Department of Government and International Affairs at the University of South Florida. And with you, again, 800-642-1234. Professor, when we come back from our break, I'd like to spend just a moment talking about the significance of the State of the Union speech itself. What is it supposed to be about historically? What has it been about? And is it still a really important, or is it just kind of a TV event? I'm John Munson, in for Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. President Obama delivered his fifth State of the Union message last night in a 65-minute address on national television and before a joint session of Congress. The president laid out his plans for 2014 and pretty much said, hey, if Congress doesn't want to do anything, I'm going to try a few things. He had a lot of other things to say, of course. We're talking about that. Wondering what you think. You can let us know at 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. My guest, Susan McManus, distinguished professor in the Department of Government and International Affairs at the University of South Florida. So, Professor, what's the significance of the State of the Union speech? Is it something that's still relevant? How has it changed over time? But what is it supposed to mean? What is it supposed to accomplish?
It's the way that a president can use the bully pulpit to show Americans what he thinks the country needs to be doing. It basically is a pep talk at the beginning of the year, which is gaining, of course, national audience. Rare is it anymore that you can hear presidents other than just a simple, part of a soundbite or a snippets of speech, but here people can tune in for the entire hour plus, and if they choose to. And so it's, I think, very important. It's a way to challenge to action Congress, the president to weigh in on his priorities for the coming year, to criticize things that haven't been done, to call attention to things he wants to get done. But it has lost a little bit of its luster as we have more media alternatives. What you see is viewership is dipping, and there was even a poll taken yesterday, forget by whom, that showed about 60% of Americans regard it as more for show than anything else, but still important nonetheless.
Well, it's important enough that we're spending 2 hours this morning on this program talking about it. We are interested in policy, but sometimes perhaps we don't like to see it being made. So any president, not just this president, who has a divided Congress to work with, how much of what a president lays out in a State of the Union speech actually gets implemented?
That's another new development, the scorecard approach. You notice prior to this speech, there were a lot of news outlets that would take a look back and see how many things had been accomplished that the president had mentioned in last year's speech. And it's difficult, of course, to do all those things without congressional action, and as you mentioned, with a divided Congress and a polarized country politically, it is very difficult, and things don't happen in a hurry, which was one of the things he tried to emphasize last night. On the other hand, that is the most difficult thing he has to face, is that Americans are impatient. When you have economic problems, you are in a hurry for something to be done. You don't want to hear talk about how long it's going to take and we might get this and more futuristic looks. And that was the difficulty that the president had last night.
Well, yeah, we all want it yesterday. When we're hurting, we want the pain to go away. And there is very little patience for the process. you know, I think we get that. It's a dilemma for anybody. And if you're the one in power, as Harry Truman famously said, the buck stops here. Let's talk for a moment about the Republican response. What did you think of the official response from Representative Kathy McMorris Rodgers?
Well, it was very different, obviously, delivered by the highest-ranking Republican woman in Congress, Kathy McMorris Rodgers, a mother of three, who was, I think not as much criticized, at least the morning after, as previous GOP responders have been. And she took a very homey kind of approach, a mother, and talked, of course, about the difference in the Republican outlook towards the economy, and mentioned some of the things that the president didn't mention, such as, more Americans were stopped looking for work and found one, and the people who had, had their insurance canceled were more than those who had signed up, things of that nature. But the bottom line was she stressed grassroots level politics and that the federal government is less of the answer to things than is action at the grassroots and by the private sector, pretty traditional Republican perspectives on politics.
Well, to no one's surprise, she blamed President Obama's policies for people's pain and hardship, and then said that the problem wasn't income inequality, the problem was opportunity inequality, and she said that the Republicans had a plan for dealing with this. Is there some risk there? I mean, she says they have a plan. Now they actually have to produce one.
Not only on that, but also on immigration and a plan for what do you do if you're going to repeal the Affordable Care Act, what do you put in its place? So I think that obviously action now is going to be required on both sides of the aisle. But I think the bigger significance for Congresswoman McMorris Rodgers giving the address was the clear attempt by Republicans to reach out to more women voters. And not only that, but Ileana Ross-Leighton, the congresswoman from Miami, gave the GOP response in Spanish to the nation. So you have two women giving the GOP response designed to soften the Republican message again, and to, of course, try to reach out to more women voters. And that's very important because the president won, handily among women in his last reelection campaign.
Well, among women and Latino voters. The Republicans have some problems on the immigration front. They can't seem to agree. We saw Senator McCain censured by the Arizona Republican Party because he supported the immigration reform passed by the Senate. The president threw this in the laps of the Republican House majority last night, saying, hey, you guys have to do something about immigration. It sounds like Speaker Boehner actually has a plan, but if you listen to the Republican response, we had the official response, and then we had several other unofficial responses from the right wing of the Republican Party with perhaps a different message, a more ideologically edgy message than the one that Congresswoman Rodgers delivered last night. So, what can we take away from this? The Republicans appear to be divided on immigration. How is this likely to play out going forward here?
That's the big question, seriously. And if you're a Republican who represents a state like Florida, which has a lot of Hispanics and has been a very important part of our state's history and culture, you have a different viewpoint on immigration reform than Republicans who represent more homogenous districts, who where your constituents feel that, for right or wrong, that immigrants are bringing taking jobs away from others and so forth. It is a very difficult issue, but significantly, just to make the point I was making, our Speaker of the House in Florida in the legislature, who's a very conservative Republican, has just come out strongly for this legislative session to give in-state tuition to children of, you know, undocumented aliens. So there you go. I mean, you see some pragmatic Republicans who know that the future of the party is pretty contingent upon attracting more Hispanic support. And but then other states are very different. Yes, it's true the Republicans have some divisions within them, I mean, the Tea Party. But the Rand Paul phenomenon, I think, is the most interesting because, as his father, Ron Paul, he has a certain, the libertarian streak has a lot of appeal to younger voters, and so we're watching that development as well. And, of course, he does take a more libertarian approach to just about everything.
But again, you know, if you have to get something done in Congress, you kind of have to be able to get everybody to line up behind something. And I'm trying to think about a lot of people are trying to think of a way that the Republicans can find an immigration plan that they can get together behind and that would also pass the Senate and that the president would sign. Well, we'll continue to discuss this and other things, and we've got some calls coming in. We'll take those. First, though, we're going to take a break for some news from National Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Radio, and then we'll be back with more of our discussion about last night's State of the Union speech. President Obama laid out his vision for 2014. What did you think? I'd like to know what you thought of the speech, anything you particularly liked or disliked. What should be priority number one in 2014? 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. Talk at WPR.org or find the Joy Cardine program on Facebook and leave your comment there. I'm John Munson in for Joy Cardine on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. John Munson in for Joy Cardine on the Ideas Network. President Obama laid out his vision for America last night in his State of the Union address, the fifth of his presidency. We're talking about that address and what the president had to say about things like income inequality and other economic issues, foreign policy, and the Republican response. My guest is Susan McManus, distinguished professor in the Department of Government and International Affairs at the University of South Florida. Let's take a call from Mark in Romance. Mark, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for taking my call. I'd like to address the very end of the speech when the president introduced Sergeant Corey Remsburg, a United States Army Ranger who was seriously wounded in Afghanistan. This is a young man who did 10 tours of combat. And I think the correct reaction of the House and all the congressional members should have been, instead of leaping to their feet and applauding, they should have dropped to their knees in silence and each one of them individually approach the sergeant and apologize for what this Congress has done regarding two completely useless wars. This Congress was unwilling to pay for the wars as they happened, and they sure as heck weren't willing to do a draft, which meant that a small group of Americans like Sergeant Remsburg had to do tour after tour after tour and be used up. And I just found it cynical, and I think we as citizens also owe an apology to the sergeant and to all the other veterans who have been killed and wounded and maimed and will live with the consequences of that for the rest of their lives, because we as citizens didn't hold this Congress and this president fully accountable.
Okay, Mark, we get it. I'd like to have get the professor's response to this, and then we will move on.
There are very many Americans who are sympathetic to the view expressed by Mark without question. And the president did, in his speech, talk about war-weary America, and that we certainly are. But in listening to some veterans' response to this last night, at least in the Tampa area, one of the things that was also talked about that they were a bit disappointed in, but both the President and Congress, was the fear that retirement benefits are going to be cut back for all of these people who have served during this long tenure and for others who have served the country. So, yes, there was a great deal of appreciation and sympathy and sadness for this sergeant. And, you know, there's just a disappointment in general that we haven't been able to resolve some of these conflicts without question.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it sometimes the whole situation reminds me of Rudyard Kipling's famous poem, Tommy. We're all about, you know, applause and everything, when there's, you know, shooting going on, and then maybe not so much afterwards.
Right.
We have an email from Luke in Fond du Lac. Luke writes, "The whole income versus opportunity inequality is ridiculous. Sure, there's lots of jobs and opportunities, but if you lose your well-paying job and go looking, you aren't able to find anything comparable. I'm a welder and make a decent wage, but would like to move to the Chicago area. For a job there in my field, they're paying half of what I make. The cost of living is higher as well. There's something definitely wrong here." I think this goes back to what you were saying. It's all well and good to talk about creating opportunities or fixing inequality, but that seems like it's off in the future someplace, and people are hurting right now.
Oh, absolutely. And that's why the economy continues to be, hands down, the most important concern of Americans in every single poll you see taken.
Mm-hmm. 800-642-1234. That's the number to call to join the program. 800-642-1234. What did you think of the president's speech last night? Was there anything that jumped out at you that you particularly liked or disliked? And what do you think should be priority number one for the nation in 2014? We're talking about that this hour. Let's move to some other issues. The president talked. He did spend some time talking about foreign policy, but on the terrorism front, he issued a call for Congress to do something so that he could finally make good on the promise he made when he ran for president the first time, which was to close the prison at Gitmo. What did you make of that?
That was one of the most surprising statements of the evening. There was mixed opinion about it as to whether that was good politics or not, because it did remind Americans that that promise that he had made so strongly initially in his presidency was still unmet. And but I think that the bigger issues on the security front that kind of got short shrift but are clearly on the minds of Americans are concerns about cyber attack, and of course you relate that to the Olympic discussion at the moment, and security abroad for Americans. I'm talking about the Olympics. But also invasion of privacy, which is becoming a big concern among voters through the NSA. He mentioned those, but just quickly, and that was why it was rather surprising that he spent, it seemed like what got a lot more attention was the Gitmo issue. Surprising comment, actually.
Okay. We have another call. Derek is on the line with us from Milton. Derek, good morning.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for taking my call. Hey, I just wanted to say I get so sick of hearing all these politicians talk about what they have to do to the economy. All they have to do is get out of the way. Okay, I'm a working American. I don't need the government to help me all the time. I'm getting really sick of it. No, I work with farmers in southern Wisconsin, for example. I have one in particular client. He's had to spend $40,000 just to get through the regulatory process to put up a steer building. You tell me if that's ridiculous or not. He hasn't spent anything on building materials. He hasn't moved an ounce of dirt. Another farmer I know, he's moving right along. Production's fine. He's profitable. And then the government comes and tells him he's got to put in a little tiny manure pit. He's only got 70 cows. because there's a little dry run ditch about 150 yards away across a very slow sloping field. So I just want to say the government needs to get out of the way. I don't make a lot of money, and my taxes actually went up. My income taxes, my paycheck's smaller in the last year.
All right, Derek, thanks for the comment. We need to get the professor's response, and then we're just about at break time.
Definitely Derek's comments reflect a working person's opinion about a lot of this, and Derek is exactly the kind of person that the president was trying to reach last night. And relatedly, it is true that the average American simply does not believe the rhetoric that we're out of a recession. A majority of Americans still think that we are in the recession, and that's the problem, a disconnect between Washington and people in the workforce at home, particularly middle-income working folks.
Well, the president touched on that some. He talked about how when corporate profits were at records and Wall Street was doing really well, not so much for the average person on the street. He made that point when he was talking about the income inequality issue and said, hey, we need to start looking out for the little guy. And to that end, and I want to bring this up, I'm using this to bring up something I want to talk about after the break. He made a proposal to start personal retirement accounts called MyRAs or MIRAs and talked about them being guaranteed investments and protected against loss. I'd like you to maybe comment on that when we come back from the break, Professor McManus. Number to call if you'd like to join the program, 800-642-1234. Send us an email, talk@WPR.org, or find us on Facebook. Look for the Joy Cardine program and leave your comment or question there. I'm John Munson, in for Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. President Obama delivered his State of the Union message last night, laid out his plans for 2014, his priorities, the things that he wants Congress to take up, and he said that there were some things he was going to go it alone on if Congress didn't act. We're talking about all of that and the Republican response to President Obama in this hour's program. My guest, Susan McManus, distinguished professor in the Department of Government and International Affairs at the University of South Florida. Well, one of the president's proposals last night was to start what he called MIRAs, M-Y-R-A's, personal retirement accounts, which he says are guaranteed investments and protected against loss. What did you make of this proposal, Professor?
It was quite interesting. It did grab a lot of attention, but then it also generated questions about how it would be done. And after the problems with the rollout of the Affordable Care Act, it at least in some of the comments that were made to our station, I'm an analyst for the NBC station in Tampa, reflected mixed opinions about it, but certainly interest.
Yeah, it's, you know, retirement is a big deal, and a lot of people are feeling really uncertain about their economic future. And as our population ages, this is only going to become a bigger issue. Some places have employee-matched 401ks and things like that, but a lot of people don't. They really are fearful about what's going to happen in the future.
Right, and that was a very good example of the president's discussion of the opportunity differences and income inequalities because of the fact that so many Americans these days are working, particularly private sector employees, are working in places where there aren't pensions and where it is difficult to save. And that's why I think the issue grabbed a bit of attention, precisely for the reasons you mentioned of an aging America, but also this difference between public and private sector workers.
Let's take a call from Mike in Green Lake next. Mike, good morning. Thanks for being here today.
Good morning. Good morning. I think one of the aspects of this MIRA that people should look at very carefully is it amounts in some ways to a confiscation of wealth, and it's not guaranteed. There's no guarantee against inflation. But you look at the government, if you're putting money in government bonds, you're loaning money to the government, would you want to loan your money to a business that's basically bankrupt with the deficits that we have?
Mike, I'd like to, when you say a confiscation of wealth, whose wealth is being confiscated? I didn't quite understand what you meant there.
Well, if you're saying that certain workers will have this required savings account that the government will put in place, you're not given a choice.
Okay. All right, Mike, thanks. Professor?
I'm not sure about the structure of this because it was rolled out rather quickly, or the details. But his point is one that we had talked about a bit earlier, a fear that if the Affordable Care Act had some flaws, that this might have flaws that might make people wary of being involved in it, frankly,
mm-hmm. Okay.
of the government having their money.
800-642-1234, still time for you to get in on our discussion this hour about the President's State of the Union Address. 800-642-1234, what did you think of it? Anything jump out at you? One of the things the President said last night, Professor, was that China was no longer the number one place for people to invest, and that it was the United States. I guess maybe I haven't been following economic news as closely as I ought, but that came as something of a surprise to me.
And it's one of the things, that statement is one of the things that in some of the newspapers across the country doing fact-checking was one of the ones that got flagged a bit. So, it is true. The president is absolutely correct in that China is starting to have economic problems, and I think that he was also trying to allay the fears of many Americans that the Chinese are replacing us as the world's economic engine.
Let's talk a little foreign policy here before we run out of time completely. The president did touch on it. He asserted that, quote, American diplomacy backed by the threat of force, end quote, was what forced Syria to give up its chemical weapons. And then he said American diplomacy backed by pressure was what had brought Iran to the negotiating table. And then he also repeated his plan to pull troops out of Afghanistan this year. Plus, he threatened to veto sanctions on Iran that would disrupt our diplomatic efforts. What did the president accomplish? What was he trying to accomplish with the foreign policy elements of his speech last night?
The primary thing, particularly regarding to the promise of a veto of the sanctions issue, was clearly aimed at the Congress. And that is a place where there's even some dissension among Democrats as to how to proceed on that whole issue of Iran, particularly among some places where you have large Jewish populations, some differences of opinion within those communities as to how to proceed on Iran. So the bulk of that discussion was negotiation is working. The world is fearful of American military intervention if the negotiations don't work. So it was aimed both domestically and internationally to leaders around the world.
Scott in Whitewater is with us by phone. Scott, good morning.
Thank you. Good morning. One of the things that he didn't bring up, and I think he should have, is we don't know how a lot of Obama's policies would even affect the United States because he's been filibustered, blocked by the Congress. I mean, it's just been complete blockage by both houses in the Congress. And I'm surprised he did not bring that up during the State of the Union.
Yeah, Professor, how would he have he was, I think, maybe trying to tone down the rhetoric a little bit last night. But what Scott says reflects what a lot of people are saying. Well, we never really would know how the policies would work because we didn't really get to see them.
Right. And that's, of course, something that he had said in the past, which when he got very aggressive about the comments, people perceived it as too much bashing of Republicans. But a lot of this is because his tone was important for two reasons. It was optimistic instead of highly negative. Americans need an infusion of good news and hope instead of just the pessimism that shows up in all the polls right now. But secondly, there are a lot of Democrats, particularly in the Senate, who represent states that are kind of red, and all that the Republicans need is to win 6 Senate seats, and they will control both houses of Congress. So the president has really toned down a lot of the Republican bashing and the obfuscation commentary to help some of these Democratic senators in these very competitive and even red states secure re-election. Much of it was about protecting Democratic control of the Senate.
But he did kind of scold Congress a little when he said things like, "You let unemployment benefits expire." He did say that, but in general, he was trying to strike a different tone.
Right. And, well, he criticized Congress overall on occasion, but did not particularly single out Republicans, with the exception of some pretty strong allusions to them when it came to the Affordable Care Act.
On the other side, too, the language in the Republican response was a more muted, perhaps, than it has been. Congresswoman Rogers talked about a more hopeful Republican vision, which sounded a little different tone.
And absolutely, all of these Congress members are looking at the approval ratings for Congress, which were, I think, 13% last night, you know, around 13%. All of these House members have to go out on the campaign trail. And we're already seeing in a lot of states, you're seeing incumbents being challenged from people within their own party who are disgusted with what is not happening in Washington. So the hopeful tone really is something that both Democrats and Republican incumbent Congress members think is important if they're going to win re-election.
Professor McManus, we've just got a couple of minutes left. Is there anything that we haven't talked about yet that really jumped out at you from last night's speech?
Well, as an educator, I was very interested to hear the discussion about how to revamp job training in this country, because it's something that absolutely has to be done as the whole economy is transitioning. And getting together, he promised to get together a group of educators and business leaders and whatever. But this is an urgency that I think a lot of people could benefit from and would be good public policy that would have a more bipartisan approach. So I don't think we've heard the end of this job retraining and revamping, because it is a key to America's, you know, recovering economy.
Well, the president did talk about making higher education more affordable and things the federal government could do to help with that. And certainly we've seen student loan debt, for example, skyrocket along with tuition rates. How likely is it, though, that the president is going to be able to get anything substantive approved by Congress?
Well, for all of the things that he put on the table, it's an uphill battle. It has been for the last couple of years, and this is commonly what happens when, A, you have sort of chronic unemployment and people worried about their putting food on the table, and, B, this kind of divisiveness and the divided control of Congress. It's a formula for inaction, and many have cast last night's speech as his last best chance to try and get some policy initiatives passed before he, of course, ends his term.
Well, and speaking of ending terms, the term of this program has ended. Professor McManus, thanks for joining me this morning.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Susan McManus, Distinguished Professor in the Department of Government and International Affairs at the University of South Florida. Bill Martins produced this hour of programming. Cynthia Schuster directed it, and Robin Cherry handled on-air production. John Munson in for Joy Cardine on the Ideas Network of WPR.